high desert
and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's time zones. Every single one of them covered like a great woolly blanket by this program called Coast to Coast AM. And I am your host throughout the weekend, and I'm honored and privileged to be doing so. It's going to be an extremely interesting weekend. We'll see who we can make angry this weekend. Not in the beginning, though. Let's first go through a couple of these sort of show things. Somebody asked me last week to how the program gets from here to there, how it gets to your radio, you know, that kind of thing. Well, the first big, giant step that it takes in that direction is from the uplink facility located here at my house in a closet. So, for those of you who over the years have wondered what sends the signal from here to there, there is an associated parabolic dish outside that receives the signal sent from this stuff that's in my closet. And it's been there for, I don't know, about a decade or so. And I would imagine if that were to be replaced now, it would be the size of a suitcase or something. But that is a complete satellite KU-band uplink setup thing you're seeing in my closet there, which is where it has resided since the very beginning. That photograph is on the website, coasttocoastam.com. Simply click on Art's webcam, and there it will be, sitting in its closet, where if you don't want to look at it or hear it, you can just shut the door, and it's like it's not even there. And now, I want to promo tomorrow night a little bit. I'm going to do, it's going to be open lines. So, a lot of times, a talk show host would like to launch a discussion in a certain direction for a program, and a lot of times it doesn't work at all. In other words, the audience will take it in the direction they want to take it, and that may occur tomorrow night, but I want to talk to you about oil and gas. And the price of gas, which is now going up to the point where a lot of people who commute aren't going to, or it's not going to be worth their while soon enough to continue that commute. They're not going to be able to afford it. We have a crisis ahead of us, directly ahead of us, in energy. No question about it. Last week I had Willie Nelson on. Willie talked about his biodiesel, and I just noticed tonight, before I came on the air, CNN headline news ran about, I think, a 2 or 3 or 4 minute piece at least on Willie Nelson's biodiesel. Showed his vehicles, all the rest of it. So that's one thing we'll talk about tomorrow night. I hope that CNN got the idea from the show here last Saturday. I rather imagine they did. Good for them. And now, so tomorrow night, I'm going to want to talk to all of you and have you talk to me about oil and about the crisis. And I've got some facts that I've dug up for the occasion, and they're pretty bleak facts indeed. So I'll sort of choose how much reality to give you. No, I'll give it all. I was just talking about that with a group of friends on a ham radio before I came on here tonight. Reality, you know, how much reality the American people really want. Boy, is that a good question. How much reality do the American people want, and how much can they take? In other words, with regard to the energy situation, the honest facts are so bleak that I'm not sure everybody wants to hear them. So we'll talk about that tomorrow night. This is a place where you do that kind of thing, where they won't talk about it elsewhere. We will. It's an emergency situation. There was one article I read, which I've got, which I may read part of it, which was something, it was called The Long Emergency. Well, yeah, it's going to be a long emergency, but the effects of it are being felt already. Been to the gas station lately? In a moment, we'll look at world news, and I'll hold that up for a moment, because even though I want to talk about oil tomorrow night and energy, I have a feeling, if it is still appropriate, the audience is going to want to talk about the Schiavo case. Maybe I'm wrong, but this has been a national traumatic event. It is currently a nationally traumatic event. Everybody's traumatized by this case. I mean, really traumatized, honestly traumatized. The latest would appear to be after another round of losses in the courts, Terry Schiavo's parents kept watch over their dying daughter Saturday. Described, depending on whose lawyer you want to listen to, as being in peace or looking like, you know, a concentration camp person. Anyway, trying in vain to give her Easter communion as their attorneys acknowledged the fight to reconnect the brain-damaged woman's feeding tube was nearing an end. They're about ready to give up, I guess. Attorneys for Bob and Mary Schindler decided not to file another motion with the Federal Appeals Court, essentially ending their effort to persuade the federal judges to intervene, something allowed only by an extraordinary law passed by Congress. Meantime, they're telling the people that are protesting and standing outside, go home and be with your loved ones. Pat Buchanan said, in part, our nation, ours is a nation where a judge may not sentence Beltway sniper Lee Malvo to death because he's too young to die, but can sentence Terri Schiavo to death because she is too severely handicapped to live. Schiavo continues a process of dying by starvation and dehydration, a method capital punishment to method of capital punishment, honestly, that most people would consider criminal if perpetrated to a pet. Wouldn't let a dog or a cat starve to death. And you know, if a dog or a cat was starving to death, the protests would be incredible. You know, the animal or organizations that would all be out like crazy, and it's not that the pro-lifers are not out on this. They certainly are, but they have not prevailed. Never. Here's somebody who sent me, you know, I've had a million emails on this subject, on the Schiavo's. I think every talk show host in America has been inundated with this sort of stuff. This person says, hey, Art, I wonder why the United Nations hasn't said anything at all concerning the way our justice system is treating Ms. Schiavo. I thought they were concerned about human rights. That's Tim. This was an interesting one, I thought. On the morning of 3:05, I told my husband, Art, that something will affect changes in consciousness worldwide. You told us, meaning me, I believe it was the 5th of March, I did, that the Princeton Consciousness Research Lab eggs had indicated unrest, yes. As she says, obviously it was a prelude to the Terri Schiavo situation, and I haven't checked, but I would be willing to bet you that that might be true, and that the eggs have registered a very great deal in the Schiavo case. People have been so emotional, so incredibly emotional about this. Either on one side or the other side, and damn near evenly divided. It is as divisive an issue as abortion. Actually, it is the same issue as abortion. It's a whole life thing, right? I think that we should have erred on the side of life in this case. There was no written document. This is what I told you last week. No written document did she leave. And so that's my personal take. I understand others feel. And then again, I'm a libertarian too. And I believe in less government, but yet I support the government's intervention, unsuccessful, albeit I support that effort. And I shouldn't normally do so. I'm not a perfect libertarian. I'm not really a perfect anything. I guess I don't fit into any exact description of what I ought to be. Libertarianism should be, you know, behind the government staying the hell out of this. So politically, I ought to be coming at it from that direction. But this is a question of life and death. And I think there should be a written document from the person involved. And I've got, you know, I've seen what all of you have seen, the assault on the internet. I'm sure most of you did not get it to the degree that I have, but I have had all of these supposed testimonies, documents from nurses, and things that bring tears to your eyes and make you think, and I can't know they're all real or even whether half of them are real, you know. And neither can you, not unless we were there. But, you know, people are saying she has spoken. Her attorneys are suggesting she has said she wanted to live. And others have said, no, it's just a reflexive sound, a reflex of a dying brain or something or another. This has been a trauma for America, a big trauma for America. So the Princeton eggs around here ought to be jumping up and down. And I don't have the chart to prove it, but I would be willing to bet you that during this Schiavo situation, and prior to it, in fact, or just prior to it, they have been jumping around. More in a moment. What really happened? The Schiavo case absolutely has been a gigantic trauma for America. I have not seen anything like this in some time. So my guess is people want to talk about it. That's usually the case. Dutch scientists are urgently checking whether perhaps the bird flu virus sweeping the country has now mutated into a dangerous human pathogen after it claimed its first human victim. A 57-year-old Dutch veterinarian died of pneumonia in the southern city of Den Bosch on Thursday, and the most likely cause, that's in quotes, say investigators, was the bird flu virus. A concern about the virus has been mounting ever since it became clear that the highly pathogenic avian flu had been ravaging Dutch poultry farms since 28 February. And it also now, they're suggesting, can in fact be, you know, go from human to human. That would be horrible if true. Thus far, 82 people with clinical symptoms have tested for positive for the bird flu virus. Doesn't sound like a lot, right? Nearly all have conjunctivitis, a mild eye infection. Six people had typical flu-like symptoms. Worryingly, there has been strong evidence, that's in quotes, that three of these cases did not catch the virus from sick poultry, but from a family member working on infected poultry farms. So there's still the possibility that it, you know, that it came directly from poultry and not from one human to the next. When that occurs, believe me, we'll all know about it. It's gonna go around the world as quickly as any flu, and for some reason, the scientists seem convinced, because we get story after story after story about how it's going to jump and become suddenly, you know, infective from human to human. Now, I don't know how they know that, but they sort of seem to know it. Speaking of knowing things, the federal government kept it secret for 3 months, but it does seem the genetically modified corn seed was sold accidentally to some U.S. farms for, let's see here, 4 years, and may have gotten into the American food supply. The accidental use of unapproved seed became public when the scientific journal Nature published a story and blew the whistle on Tuesday. The corn seed was probably safe, however. America's food supply and plant and animal stocks were not harmed and remain safe to eat, according to officials of the seed company and the federal government. However, they decided to keep all of this secret from us. I wonder if they would have told us, you know, if suddenly everything had gone wrong, what do you all think? Would they have told us? Well, we know why everything's going wrong. It's because Unfortunately, this seed stuff got out. It's not enough for everybody. Sheldon Krimsky, a Tufts University environmental policy professor, said it's not acceptable. He's a longtime foe of genetically modified crops. He says, quote, they have both a moral and legal obligation to reveal violations, Krimsky said. This is a government that's operating in a stealth manner that wants to keep bad news from the public, end quote. I don't mean to laugh, but, you know, this might have been bad news, right? Now, they've told us now that we know it isn't bad news. We know, apparently, that it's all right. But you've got to wonder, if it didn't go right, if it had all gone terribly wrong and people began getting sick, would they have revealed this now? Well, I sort of doubt it. So this professor at Tufts is probably right. But think how that whole principle applies to the oil and gasoline crisis, for example. You got to keep bad news from the American public. Let me tell you, folks, it's really bad news. What's about to happen with energy in America and the world, actually the world, not just America, is really bad news. So I guess that principle carries over, huh? What do you think? A 70-million-old, year-old Tyrannosaurus rex fossil that they have dug out of a hunk of sandstone has yielded a real bonanza, folks. Soft tissue. Soft tissue from a Tyrannosaurus rex. How incredible is that? Not hardened, petrified something or another, but real, honest to God, soft tissue. Blood vessels, whole cells, pliable, malleable inside guts of a T-Rex. Do you know what that means? Well, potentially a lot of things. Let me keep reading here. When they got it into a lab and chemically removed the hard minerals, they found what looked like blood vessels, bone cells, and perhaps even blood cells. They are transparent. They're flexible, said Mary Higley Schweitzer of North Carolina State University and Montana State University. She conducted the study, I guess. She said the vessels were flexible, and in some cases their contents could be squeezed out. Squeezed out. How could it possibly have been kept in that kind of shape for that long? A preservation of this extent, she said, where you still have this flexibility and transparency, has never before seen in a dinosaur. So could it mean Jurassic Park? Well, the $64 billion question, of course, is whether they can get some sort of genetics from it. If they get a perfect genetic fingerprint of a Tyrannosaurus, you've got to wonder, would they attempt to recreate the Tyrannosaurus? How would you vote? If it turns out, because of this wonderfully pliable, soft, fresh, gutsy material of a T-Rex, I wonder how all of you would vote. If we could create a T-Rex, should we create a T-Rex? And we may be on the horns of that dilemma. We may have the goods. Down in Florida, something not so good is happening. Seven children have contracted a life-threatening kidney infection. Health officials there are very concerned, and apparently because they have gone to a petting zoo. Five of the seven were hospitalized in critical condition, including one on dialysis, according to the Orlando Central. And again, these children only went and petted some animals. Yikes. So I guess you better be careful. Of course, it could turn out to be something else, but they were just petting the animals, and they've come down with this. This is a fascinating story. I don't think I'm going to have time for it. Marianne Fife and her family never thought they'd see their three-year-old cat, Kane, again. But when the movers were at the Fife's Iroquois Point home December 15th, Kane was nowhere to be found. The Fife thought that Kane might have run out of the house. He's an indoor cat. But the movers had left all the doors of the Albatross Avenue home open. Well, you know cats, right? They like to hide in stuff. They particularly like a dresser drawer. Well, Cain figured out how to open drawers, I guess. But, unfortunately, the movers, in this case, remember this family was moving, taped all the drawers shut. So, of course, they missed their cat before they moved, and they called, and they called in the night, and they went out, and they called this poor little cat, Cain, and Cain did not come back. Cain appeared lost forever. But I think you know where Cain is. Tell you all about it in a moment. The rest of the story, as Paul would say. From the high desert, where once again there is rain forecast for Monday. About 20 miles here from Death Valley, home of the new Redwood Forest. Soon, if this keeps up, this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
Riders on the storm, riders on the storm, into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown.
Everybody, listen very carefully. The phone numbers, the magic numbers to join us on the air are a little different during the weekend, and here they are.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
All right, in a moment, we'll do the rest of the Cain the Cat story and then dive into the phone line. Stay right there. Secret. All right, let's continue with Cain the Cat. Now, again, Cain's family lived in the islands, you know, in Hawaii. Cain liked drawers. Remember all of this. Well, Cain went missing. The Fifes, who owned Cain, stayed, or were, you know, part of family, stayed in the Iroquois Point home 5 more days. 5 more days waiting out on the lanai every night for Cain to possibly return. The day before they moved into a hotel, Marianne and her 18-year-old daughter drove around the neighborhood looking for Cain. She was crying, calling out his name, Marianne said. Marianne gave the neighbors and maintenance workers her number and said, you know, call if you see Cain, call. And the family left Hawaii on December 26 without Cain. Very sad. The wife settled in Crofton, Kentucky. That's a long ways away. And their household items arrived January 27th, just in case Kane had been packed with the furniture. Larry Fife sent his wife and daughter away from the house before the movers arrived, you know, expecting to find the worst, of course. When the movers unloaded the dresser, there was indeed a foul odor. Larry thought the worst was about to be realized. But when he opened the dresser, Kane was in one of the drawers, staring back at him, meowing. He called Marianne with the news. He said, "You're not going to believe this. The cat's alive." Marianne was driving around with her daughter. I told her she was jumping up and down. She was crying. I was crying. We were all hyperventilating. Kane had weighed 13 and a half pounds in Hawaii. When he arrived in Crofton, after 44 days inside the dresser, he weighed less than 3 pounds. But Kane's alive. They, of course, got him water right away, took him to an animal clinic, stayed overnight there, was released the following day. No liver or kidney damage. It's a miracle, up to 11 and a half pounds right now, and definitely charged one of his cat lives. So there you have it. That story of Kane, 44 days without food or water. 44 days without food or water. Boy, we wouldn't do that to an animal, would we? Mm-mm. We wouldn't do that to a dog or a cat. We wouldn't starve them to death, would we? Mm-mm. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Sart.
Yes.
Hey, this is Mike from Syracuse.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, big fan, man. Yeah, I had a story about Hale Bob there.
Hale Bob, the comet.
Yeah, what do you remember about the Hale Bob comet?
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah, everything.
I got a crazy story. I used to, it was a while ago, I worked in a high security area, and, you know, I was a janitor there. I didn't do anything important, but I smoked my cigarette. And
a high security area of what?
I don't know if I should really say.
Well, don't give me the name of a business or something like that. Is that what it is?
The government.
That's a business.
Yeah. Well, there was a bunch of people in there. It wasn't just one thing. It was, you know, Army, Air Force, and
all right,
a whole lot.
I think I get the picture. And so, out on coffee breaks, you overheard things.
Well, that's, you know, you start talking, you're smoking cigarettes, and, you know, one thing leads to another, and, you know, you're talking.
Yes.
But, you know, they would never say, no, you know, oh, we got this back here or this, you know, just little things pop out here and there. That,
well, so what did you learn?
What's that?
What did you learn?
Well, this one thing in particular, I was reading the newspaper, and it was about those Heaven's Gate people, and I was laughing and making jokes, you know. And this one guy, he was it's like, do you know the whole deal was, why they thought the aliens were coming back and all that?
They thought something trailed the comet.
Yeah, and I had no idea. And he's like, "Come in my office, I want to show you something."
And?
And he showed me this picture, and it had this comet, and there was five spears behind it. And I was like, "Wow, wouldn't they take, you know, that's pretty cool." He's like, "We took this in 1959. I'm like, "In 1959? And he's like, "Yeah." He goes, "But, you know, here's the kicker. I want you to look at this." And he had a NASA website, and there was a picture of the front of it. And he said that as the comet comes through, he goes, "Check this out. The Hubble telescope is taking pictures." But just as the comet, as we're about to find out what's really behind that, you know, the million-dollar question.
Oh, the Hubble failed. Yes, I recall very well. Yes.
Yeah, I was like,
as the comet was leaving, and we were able to, I remember they said they were going to get absolutely wonderful photographs of the comet as it was leaving, and there was, in fact, a very mysterious failure of the Hubble at exactly that time, and so they couldn't do it. One of the greatest by magnitude events of that sort, and probably in our lifetimes, right? And they had the Hubble all set to go, and that it failed. I remember that. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I didn't realize it was my turn.
It's not your turn.
This is Jerry. I drive a truck for a living. I'm just a little bit south of Flagstaff.
Yes, sir.
I thought I'd present an interesting scenario just on this Schreibel case down there in Florida.
The Schreibel case, of course.
Following the money, it appears to me that there's three groups that are just really not accountability for keeping this gal alive. Who's going to pay the cost? The government don't, you know, keep in mind the mad cow disease is hanging on the horizon out there.
Well, I'm not sure what that has to do with this, but all right.
Well, if their brains are eat up, you know, got holes in them, and they're non-repairable.
I see. Precedent setting.
There's a huge influx hanging on the horizon. The fuss is about.
I got it.
And the government don't want to take care of the hospitals. You know, it bankrupt them, the insurance companies. I think there's a mad scramble.
All right. Hold on. You're breaking up on your cell phone. I definitely have the idea. He's suggesting that we're establishing a precedent here. And that if something like mad cow disease should come along, then perhaps the Schiavo case, established law, would apply to millions and millions of people affected by CJD. There is an angle I had not considered, I must confess. Well, would it apply to people with Alzheimer's? Where would we draw the line? How much memory and consciousness do you have to display before you might not be lumped in with some sort of thing that comes out of this newly established? It's sort of newly established law, isn't it? In a lot of different ways, in terms of the intervention of the federal government, in terms of what they've not been willing to listen to. You know, some of this stuff, I must admit, I have no way of knowing. In fact, we're going to talk about the internet tonight. We're having, just for a lighter break here, Kevin Mitnick will be on. Kevin is one of the, you know, famous hackers, most famous hackers in all the world. On the website it says, the most celebrated hacker in the world, Kevin Mitnick. I added the world. I wonder if that's the right word to use for a hacker. Celebrated hacker. Celebrated? Infamous, perhaps? I don't know if any, well, maybe he is celebrated in a way. We'll find out tonight. We'll ask him all about it. He's a fascinating guy. He got in so much trouble. Kevin got in so much trouble hacking. At any rate, I'll tell you what, let's continue. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Yes, this is Emily from Milwaukee calling.
Good morning, Emily.
Yes, happy Easter to you and Ramona.
Thank you.
And may the Easter Bunny bring you many unidentified flying Easter eggs. You know, Art, I was thinking about this Terry Schiavo thing. I saw some Fox update before your show came on. I guess that they're even talking about now that Terry Schiavo may not even be able to be buried by her family, that Michael Schiavo is going to take full control over even her burial.
Well, I understood that there was to be he had wanted a cremation, isn't that correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that the dignity would not even be for the family, that she would not even be able to go to where Terry Schiavo's parents would be buried. And the man is not married, has the two kids. And also, you know, you look at it, the judicial tyranny that's happening.
You know, through all this, you got to wonder, why didn't he just divorce her?
Absolutely.
And then the whole, so, you know, could money have anything to do with this?
It could have very well have had something, because, of course, the $1.5 million that he did receive initially for the suit as she did have that accident. That fatal accident.
Is that what the settlement was? $1.5 million?
$1.5 million. And there was very little rehab. Very little rehab that would possibly have gotten her.
I know. I must admit, and maybe you should too. I've read all the internet stuff. Who the hell knows what you can believe and what you can't believe? It's one of the complaints I have about the internet. If I were to believe, I don't know, a third of what I've read on the Schiavo case, I'd probably be over there out in front of the street myself protesting. I just don't know what to believe on the internet anymore. How can you know what to believe? Even off the internet, even if you go and you read the headlines, you know, according to one lawyer, it's one thing. According to another lawyer, it's a peaceful, quiet death. And people are, my God, this is emotional. Saying, well, I say, if it's so peaceful and quiet, then let in a camera and we'll see how peaceful and quiet a death it really is. We don't starve dogs or cats to death. God. Really traumatic. This is really traumatic for all of America, not just Terri Schiavo. This has really put a dent in the American psyche. And I hope we come out of it okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Yes.
This is Dina. I'm calling you from Tucson.
Yes, ma'am.
It is a pleasure to finally talk to you, sir.
Glad to have you.
I'm also calling about Terri Schiavo. I'm really broken-hearted by this whole thing. And one of the things that I was thinking, and maybe this is just a stupid question, but I wondered why apparently she is able to swallow. Is that right?
I guess.
Why don't they put a glass of water in front of her and see, you know, if she swallows the water? I mean, wouldn't that show, with the judges sitting there, you know, wouldn't that show that she wanted to live, that she did not want to starve?
I don't know. It's gone further than that. It's, you know, one of the lawyers claims to have heard her saying, you know, something like, I want to live.
Yeah. But, I mean, why don't they do a test? You know, this where it's, you know, something she is able to do and, you know, is able to answer, basically, by swallowing water or not, you know, whether she wants to take water into her body or not. That was one thing I was just wondering. And then, you know, another thing is the whole thing that just really sits wrong with me is that this vow that Terri took or said to Michael, supposedly.
Yes.
Is so important to him, and yet his marital vows are obviously of little or no.
In that he's living with another woman and all
right.
That. I don't know what to say about all this. Except that it's been just incredibly traumatic. I don't think since the fiery days of Roe versus Wade that we've had it this rough. And this is precedent setting. It is precedent setting. I mean, in a way, that caller was right. Right. If some disease came along that essentially mentally disabled people to some certain degree, would this case then have precedent, and would we start starving people to death? And then just one last thing. Again, with all of these internet things that are floating around, and I certainly don't know what to give credence to, but there is a lot. Shouldn't the courts be reviewing some of these statements and stuff if they really are true from the nurses and all that? And what's the rush? I know all these years, but now all of this, because of the national brouhaha, all of this stuff ought to be examined by somebody, shouldn't it? Shouldn't some judge actually look at it? I mean, they're to the stage where they're rejecting even looking at the evidence. They don't want to see it. Don't show us. We've made our rulings. That's it. But if she's really brain dead, like they say, then waiting a little while longer to investigate this stuff, who's it going to hurt? Who's it going to hurt? To examine some of the allegations that have been made might take, I don't know how much of a court's time, but in terms of the significance to America and the precedent setting that's going on here, why would it hurt to wait a little bit? If she's really brain dead, it's not going to hurt her at all, right? But, I mean, what if there is something to some of this stuff? Wouldn't hurt to wait. First-time caller line, you're on the air with a lot of noise there. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi. I'm all right.
This is Terry from Montezuma, Georgia.
Yes, ma'am.
I want to ask you.
How's the weather there? I heard there was like tornado warnings and everything.
Yes, sir. It's pretty bad down there right now. So I'm headed that way. I drive a truck. I'm over here on 47 South in Illinois.
Oh, okay. You're not near home then.
All right. But my family tells me that it's pretty bad down there right now.
Yeah, I can hear the Georgia in you. Anyway, what's up?
Do you remember that movie Soylent Green?
Yes.
I feel like if they let Terry die, that's going to happen to us. That's going to open the door for so much, you know, so many different things to happen now.
It might. I mean, the caller who called earlier, I couldn't figure out where it was going at first, and then it dawned on me like a brick hitting my head. Of course, if a lot of people became mentally disabled, oh, well, we'd have a precedent, wouldn't we?
Uh-huh. I know, and I thought about that movie with all this. This has really upset me. I can't believe we're letting this happen.
I guess I can't either.
Hey, you have a good night. I really appreciate you talking to me. I enjoy your show.
Take care. That's it. I can't believe it's happening either. I really can't. Take what I said to heart. Why does it matter? Why would it matter if she's really brain dead to stop and examine some of these incredible allegations? You know, some of them are supposedly signed affidavits. That kind of stuff. If it's really there and that stuff is real, then that really does bear examination, because once she's gone, then that's that, isn't it? Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi there. This is Robert from Washington, D.C., and I guess you would call me a former contemporary of Mr. Mitnick's. We knew a lot of the same people.
Oh, really? Well, he's about to be on, and this hour is drawing to a close. So, very quickly, what's up?
I know some people who were present when he was arrested in North Carolina, and
yeah.
At the time of when they closed the door on him, he said,
"Turn your radio off.
No matter what happens, I'm a patriot."
Yes, turn your radio off, please. All the way off. Yes, he's a patriot. I'm sure he is.
No. He made the statement, "No matter what happens, remember I'm a patriot," and no one ever explained what that meant. And my question is, I'd be interested if he would either explain what that meant and also explain whether he had ever been contacted by foreign intelligence agencies, for example, the Israelis, in the context of hacking activities.
Huh. I will absolutely ask him that.
Thank you very much, sir.
So when he was arrested, he allegedly said, "No matter what happens, remember I'm a patriot?"
That was told to me by one of the FBI agents who was participating in the arrest.
I appreciate your call, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
A comrade in arms. In arms. Coming up in a moment, folks, the person in question himself, Kevin Mitnick, he is described as the most celebrated hacker, I'll add, in the world. From the high desert in the middle of the night, indeed, it's a lie.